Save big on your next project right now at Menards. From mold and mildew stains and hard-to-stick surfaces, preparing your paint project has never been easier than with Bullseye 123. Zinsser Bullseye 123 Primer is an all-purpose, high-performance, water-based primer for interior and exterior residential, commercial, and industrial applications. Save big on Bullseye 123 Primer. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Probably can't get away from Pendergrass in any way. Not even contract negotiations that the boy's not part of. It's like, well, we can't give you what you want because we haven't given it to the other lad.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skehu and Paul Murphy.
Welcome along. It is the first weekend of the Championship, and what a weekend it was as well. Three successive years now that Cork have failed to win their opening game in the Munster Championship. It's worked out okay in a couple of those seasons. After 3 years in a row, Clare failed to win their opening game in Ennis as well. Again, seemed to work out fairly okay last year. The All-Ireland champions battling back from 12 points down to secure a draw with the new league champions at Cusick Park. But it was actually Cork who had to score a minute over injury time through Declan Dalton to rescue a draw. Limerick have won just once in half a century of championship encounters with Tipperary at Semple Stadium. They'll have to wait for a second win at the venue after they played out a thrilling draw at Tom Semple's field on Sunday. Kilkenny got their first ever round robin win against Galway. That was a pretty facile affair. Dublin had a late rally to defeat Offaly, and Antrim's woes on the road continued with a loss against Wexford. The two goals they conceded were particularly poor during the game, but fewer than 19,000 people combined attended all of those Leinster games at the weekend. We've got Paul Murphy with us. Paul Murphy, how are you?
Good night, lads. How are you?
Sunny background. This is an undisclosed location. You didn't have to read the proclamation this year, Murph.
No. I think you just get one swing at that and on you go. So Connor Gibbons read it this year. So did a mighty job. Fair play to him.
He did a fine job. I was listening to him on the radio yesterday when they were playing and I thought, nah, he's not Murph, but he's done a fine job.
You're biased, Will.
Slightly. We've got James Skell away from the spicy margaritas eventually. How are you, Skell?
Look, there's no point hiding it, Will. I'm a 3 out of 10 today. It's not because of the match the weekend either. This was done by myself. So let's just say the bank holiday weekend got the better of me, Will.
Well, you were high rocks in, first of all, so you were in Athlone for that, which set you up very nicely for the Stag. Was that a conscious decision that you were going, engagement party? You've already put me up on this. So Davy Glennon was having his engagement party in Athlone. Did you say, sure, look, I'll take a bit of high rocks in the IT in the morning and go from there?
I think it's just the way it landed out. The high rocks was kind of early. What time was it? 10 to 12 we started the race, so we're finished around 1-ish, and I was itching to go for a pint, because as you know, Murphy, you know the high rocks, it's torture. Yeah. It really is, right? And there's a good sense of achievement after you finish it. So I managed to hold off, went home, watched the Cork and Clare game, and then I got the lip at half five. let's just say I had a few pints before I went to the English party with Grace.
I say you might have needed a few pints after that Galway performance in Nolan Park, but you were doing the high rocks with your sister, were you?
Yeah, Michelle, yeah. We did it yesterday in the mixed doubles. We had Rimini initially planned. So this was going to be the practice round, if you want to call it. And Rimini is on the 30th of April, or 30th of May, excuse me. But that now was going to get sidelined because, of course, this sounds so bad. She's pregnant, right? So congrats, Michelle. But like, so selfish. So no, we can't. And she goes, I'd only be 17 weeks pregnant in Rimini. I'm like, we're not doing this. Like, if you fall or you trip or even yourself, like,
yeah,
You know, I couldn't, the burpee broad jumps, for example, you have to go 80 meters in burpees. Like, how can she, you know, like with her condition? Or not, that sounds bad. Not her condition, but with, I'm going to stop there, okay?
Yeah, her current status, her current predicament is that she is pregnant, and therefore it would not make any sense for a woman who's a few months pregnant to be taking part in a competitive competition.
It's just dangerous. Like, geez, God forbid anything happens, or you know yourself.
Ah, look, you can reassess and the doubles can come back again. So Michal Donoghue's take on that was an unacceptable performance. We'll get to that in time because as much as I was given out that the coverage of the Kilkenny and Galway game started with, we know Munster is where it's at, but we've got a game here to watch. I don't think it was the best way to sell the Leinster Championship at the weekend, but as it proved, and as many people would have pointed out online, the Munster Championship was shit hot at the weekend with the two games that we had. The games on Sunday, so we're treated to a couple of crackers. The one on the 2 o'clock throw-in, it's one of those, Murph, where it actually felt ominous at one point. We were messing each other because Skell was a little bit behind on the stream that he was watching the game on. But Cork had scored 2 goals and 8 points by the 25th minute. They're poking points over for fun. Hayes has got a couple of goals. They've already come away with a big win from Ennis where they scored 6-20 earlier in the year. You're starting to think at that point, maybe the league champions are going to completely roll Clare over. But that wasn't to be the final story.
No, yeah, like as you were saying, when we were talking, I think the words that were uttered were, this could be a serious beating. Because at one stage there, it looked to be that way. Like, I was just making a few notes of it during the game. And I think by about the 26th or 27th minute, Tony Kelly was the only person to have scored from play by that stage for Clare. Like, they were relying on a few scan frees. Now, I know just before they went in at the halftime break, you know, they got a few more from play. Grand. But really up until that, you know, Cork were just doing all the running and seemed to be quite comfortable, seemed to just be absorbing anything Clare were throwing at them, getting a few breaks, and they just looked electric. Even the goals they created, like you were just looking at them. Brian Hayes' first goal, you know, really took a few bells going through and created a goal from, to an extent, nothing. You know, like as in some players aren't able to score that type of goal. And then a second goal and Alan Connolly gets it, and it was really just, you know, wide open straight in for Brian Hayes. So when you're looking at it, you're saying, it's hard to see where Clare were going to come back from that position. And again, when you look at Clare's side of it, with Tony Kelly being the only person to have scored from play after, let's call it, you know, 25 to 30 minutes, that in itself was kind of an indicator where you're going, well, it's so hard to see where Clare are going to come back here. And like, part of me thought though as well, Will, at the final whistle, that last year at the All-Ireland final, when, you know, we all gave our opinions as to who was going to win, like me and you just picked Clare because we're like, somehow Clare, regardless of, like, they don't look at the long game. They look at the long game in terms of, you know, what's happening in 2 matches, 3 matches, 4 matches. They're very good at playing what's in front of them. And, like, the response in the second half against Cork was outstanding. And probably very few teams can actually do that. I think Ennis kind of fed into it as well. Like, I'd nearly compare it to being, like, in Parnell Park 10 or 15 years ago where you really felt the crowd was on top of you. We've said that so much about Ennis. But from watching on the telly, once Clare got the bit of momentum, you really felt that, okay, something could actually happen here. And even from about 5 or 6 points out, you were thinking, you know, like particularly in hurling this day and age, we've seen that lead just be, you know, cut away. But when you look at it at the other side, Cork were 8 points up, was it, on the 68th minute? I know there were 6 or correct, 7 minutes added on.
Yep.
Like, that's still remarkable. It wasn't even a case that, yes, Clare came out and performed well in the start of the second half, but Cork then had their purple patch, kicked on a small bit, and you felt, oh, okay, Cork are now going to just close this thing out, and it mightn't be a great second half, but they'll just keep the distance. But when you even just think about that, that in the 68th minute, Cork was still up by 8 points, that's such a remarkable comeback for Clare. But you go back 12 months ago, Clare were the team that were up ahead by 8 points, 9 points, and then you see Limerick with 10 minutes to go, probably a small bit further out, you know, they turned them over. So it's just amazing in 12 months' time. And people, I think, are trying to dig into this no more than we are as to what does it mean. In a small little moment, like now, you can take a few bits from it. But again, as we saw, you know, when Clare were beaten by Limerick last year, 12 months ago, in this exact one, first round of the championship, you're thinking, God, how will Clare recover from this? Because it ended up in a draw, you know, I think if Cork lost by a point here, you would have said, do you know, what does that do for the confidence of Cork that they were so far ahead and they lost it? But both teams taking a draw, and I know we'll go on to the next game in a while, it's a funny one that you're trying to go on. Okay, I think Cork actually come out of this unscathed. They'll look at their few lessons and go, as we should have closed out that game. They'll look at Barrett saying, look, that was silly. You're making the referee make a hard decision, regardless whether you think there was much contact or not. And the few things they'll take from it there. But because it's a draw, you can kind of walk away from it and go, yeah, we can be disappointed, but look, we took a point away from home. Brian Hayes alluded to it in his Man of the Match speech afterwards that, you know, we took a point away from home and we'll march on. So it's a kind of, it's such a strange one. These draws are such a strange one to try and sift through the ashes of. But funnily enough, I do think, even though Cork will be disappointed, I think both sides will be happy with that point yesterday.
Yeah, Pat Ryan said on Off the Ball after the game, and he also said on the Sunday game last night, he would have taken a point had it been offered to him going up the road to Ennis. And obviously that must have been his mind. He does that in two separate interviews. Now, I know that's probably a reflection on the nature of being ahead for the vast majority of the game and then having to be rescued by a very late point. Maybe then it feels like a relief. But I think he was probably genuine in his feeling that you don't want to take a defeat in the first round. Like, maybe Waterford are a team that actually benefit the most from this weekend, because the four teams around them have all drawn, and now Waterford go out next weekend. And if they were to pick up a win against Clare, next thing their position is enhanced by the fact that nobody pulled away on weekend one. But we can talk maybe a bit later about Waterford coming in off the back of a break, having won Division 1B. Skell, what I notice about the atmosphere around all this as well is that when McCarthy's goal goes in, it gives this huge lift to the whole place. And like, it was a cauldron of noise at that stage. Then Peter Duggan scores again. It's like the noise level just picks up again. I'm sure for the Clare players, who in both those cases were chasing leads at the time, that must give huge energy to them when there's that type of noise. I know you've been in Cusick Park for a few championship games over the last few years.
Yeah, like it's an electric venue, to be fair, and like it's great to be part of that, even when you're a spectator or like that. I was doing media, and the energy that the crowd give to the players, they feed into it. So it's like one big collective effort is the only way I can describe it. And Murphy, we touched on it, we spoke about this before, and you're right, I agree with you. I don't think, and we said it last week, there's any other county that has a connection like Clare and their supporters, and it's like just they're all pushing at the wheel. And for me, I was watching the game live, a bit behind, but I thought, even when McCarthy's goal got in, yes, it's a lifeline, but geez, there's too much ground to make up here, lads. You know, there's just the Cork forwards, like Clare are working hard for the scores, of course they were, but Cork was still knocking a bit of change there, let's say from minute 35 to 50, I could say. Things were still going okay. There was an awful lot of danger in the Cork forward line. So you're looking at it going, well, unless Clare can snuff out the Cork attack whilst, you know, scoring up the other end, scoring goals, it's hard to see them come back. And for them to come back was awesome. Like, and they only had 20 shots from play. This is the part I can't get over. Like, you know, the shot count wasn't huge, but they managed to score 321? 321, yeah.
And they got 312 of that in the second half alone.
Like, that's amazing. That's 15 shots there, right? And they only had 20 in the whole game from play. Like, that's just amazing. You know, when you put that into context, because like from an intercounty perspective, teams are trying to hit the 50 mark. You're trying to get 50 frees inclusive, you know, from all. So like Clare, what might count here? They had 36 shots in total, you know, which is not a huge count. For them to come away with 321 is a very good efficiency rate from their perspective. Like, they clawed that game from the death, the real death. Murphy said it was 67, 68 minutes. There was still like eight in it, which seems like an awful lot of ground to make up. But they willed their way to it. And for them to get back into the lead was awesome. And the manner in which they did it is, you know, it wasn't an overly tactical approach. It was lump the ball in and win your ball.
But that works, Gil, if you've got Peter Duggan in around the square. So we wondered what was going to happen when Shane O'Donnell was out. And obviously they put the camera to Duggan. Him. Oh, we may well have a slight internet issue in Capitagle.
Small internet issue.
Hello.
Small, is it? Can you hear us?
Can you hear us now, Skell?
Where'd you lose me? Yeah.
Oh, we lost you. I was about to ask you a question you were teeing yourself up for in your own mind, which is that we cut to Shane O'Donnell a few times in the stand, but Peter Duggan was there as maybe a different option in and around the square, and Clare made the most of it, particularly in the second half.
Yeah. Like, and I suppose they learned that the first time I'd seen Peter Duggan in the full forward line was when they played Cork in the league fixture. And particularly in the second half, he caused hassle there as well. And it's like, he's not an easy man to deal with because he catches in both hands, which is a rarity. You don't see players, well, I don't know any other player, maybe you can correct me here, who has the ability to catch with both hands. So that means the defender has a tough job. You pick your hand, right? If he's catching his left hand, you pick his left shoulder, try to keep the hand down. But in Peter Duggan's instance, he swaps the hurl over and catches with his right hand. Extremely difficult to try and mark that because he's essentially ambidextrous catching the ball. So it's, how do you mark him? So And then when he gets the ball, he's so hard to foul. And what I mean by that, right, is you can't keep his arms down, whatever it is. He's got such power, upper body strength. He's able to get out of tackles. Like his goal, his goal was awesome. Like that shouldn't be, that should not be a goal. If you're a defense there looking at that, you're still thinking, although he has the ball, we should be okay here. We should be all right because we've got four lads in the vicinity, including the goalie, and we should be able to turn him over. And for him to swap the hands, which was the skill base, like unreal, and then finish the ball, savage. Like, I just think, if I touch on the skill for a second, and I know we're talking about Duggan, but even Alan Connolly's point, you know, I don't think the game, like we grew up watching the game in the 90s and 2000s. I don't think I've ever seen the game as skillful as it is now, what these players are putting on show. Like we've now grown accustomed to seeing one-handed points from Duggan yesterday and from Connolly. This is like, this now is normality. You know, so the levels that these players are producing is just awesome. Great to watch.
Yeah. I've written that down, Murph, here. I've got Alan Connolly, flick point, ridiculous 50th minute. 3 minutes later, Duggan's one-handed strike when he's got two players hanging off him. Like, they're both just insane pieces of skill. And I was thinking Tony Kelly, when the game was in the stretch, I'm going to say this is maybe a minute into injury time. Do you remember the one where they won back the Cork puck out? He flicks it to Carl Malone and the ball comes back to Kelly. Any normal player would decide, I'm going to try and pick someone out, or maybe we'll recycle this and have a think about a better shooting position. And Tony Kelly just bangs it over from long range from what seems nearly impossible angle.
Yeah, like, I mean, there were several instances. Like, one of the notes I made there was Alan Connolly's point, I think, in the 35th, 36th minute of the first half, where he was falling out towards the sideline and he just slapped it straight up into the air. And, like, you nearly forget about it because, like Skehill was saying there, and even yourself, was that just there were so many different elements of skill during the game. Mm-hmm. That you could point to. Like, one of the things I thought about over the whole weekend, and it's not to get off Clare and Cork, one of the things I thought about is that we don't even acknowledge it anymore when a player picks up the ball one-handed, popping it backwards. Like, it was kind of something, okay, John Troy was the first fella I ever see to do it. Keane Lynch then seemed to be the first fella who started regularly doing it. But now, whether it was Kilkenny and Galway, I saw John Donnelly do it two or three times. We saw it in Clare and Cork, and we saw it in Tip and Limerick, where lads were just popping it up. Like, that's just accepted now as players at this level are picking it up. And now we're looking at one-handed, back to goal, putting the ball over the bar stuff. And then again, like I said, Alan Connolly's point, I think, was one of the points of the, well, I say one of the points of the championship. Wouldn't be hard. We've only had a few matches soon in one weekend. But certainly by the end of the year, I think we'll turn around and look at that point and say, like, just an absolutely outstanding score. But I do think there's, like, you have to make notes of these. If you have any idea of trying to remember them, there's no longer one flashpoint of skill during a game. There's so many small little periods, and we'll get on to Tip and Limerick in a while, where there was a few different bits of skill there as well. But no, there was just, look, again, I think Skehill said it right there, between Connolly and Duggan's point. Was it Duggan or McCarthy? Duggan, yeah. It was
Duggan.
No, Duggan one-handed.
Yeah. Was Reedy's goal one-handed as well, Ed?
I think he might have been, yeah.
It could have been, yeah. And Adam English's goal was one-handed.
What's the point of using two hands, sir?
There was 2-2 scored by one hand over the weekend. ridiculous. But it's top class to see it, like, you know. And I think probably the conditions for Galway and Kenny, again, we'll get to it in a while. Probably it was the only match of the weekend that really the rain kind of affected it. It looked a bit boggy and looked a bit mucky. But, you know, we're really seeing the summertime hurling kicking in now for lads. And, you know, another skill which I'm going to pick out Cork in particular, the length they're getting into their sideline cuts is remarkable, really. Like, every so often we see spurts of this where lads are really getting a bit of traction, a bit of currency out of their sideline cuts. But Cork have lads who are taking their sidelines, and you can see it happen. They're taking their sidelines from their own 21 out towards the 45. And they're getting it up to the far D, which is it's a great weapon to use. Like, it really turns the sideline on its head if you can do that consistently. Not just a case of that you do it and it goes 10 yards, but there's so many elements you can pick apart there that the skill level is just really through the roof. And I know we'll get on to Connolly's points for Tipperary, the 4 points he got as well. Like, I mean, just there's been such high levels of skill over the weekend. It's so hard to even just pick out one or two elements.
Yeah, Cork, it means that Cork and Limerick particularly have got such a clash when it comes to the way they actually recycle the ball on sidelines. Limerick will go short nearly every single time. Cork, as you say, will put it down, they'll get a tuft of grass and a little bit old school, they'll try and get the ball very quickly into their forward line. Your specialist area scale is puckouts. So talk to me about how effective Cork's puckout was in the first half. They got 2-6 from their own puckouts in the first half, which was remarkable. Again, we talk about when Collins puts Welly on it and their forwards get moving, they're incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, they seem to be the first team that brought back the long, long puck out, we used to call it. You have long, and then you have long, long. So the long, long was where you're aiming for the
Hate the snow on it.
Yeah, exactly, for the Fardine, or aiming for someone like Harrandy or Brian Hayes. And then what happens is it breaks, and all you know, it's absolute pandemonium. Like, and Clare didn't do that at all in the first half. You know what I mean? But they adopted it in the second half, particularly in the last 15 minutes. And it just, you know, it creates a bit of pandemonium, as I said. It creates a bit of unknown. And so if you've got a keeper like Collins, right? And he's very good now. I have to give him credit where credit is due. He's good at analysing when to go long and how to open space up, because he's been offered as well. So what I mean by that is, you can stand in the goal as a goalie and you're looking out and you're saying there's no offering here from anyone, you know, in terms of your forwards. There's no movement. And I'll come on to the Galway situation a while, I will, right? Because I've got a lot of people coming at me to talk about this. But for in this instance, right, the Cork forwards offer an awful lot to Collins. You know, and in the occasion in the set where the opposition defence shuts off Cork, he goes short and then they go wide. So what happens is you'll see a short ball will go to Coleman. It then invariably goes down the same wing to Horgan, who comes, and there's always a wraparound like Barrett or Harrandy. But they're deadly at lateral movement. So what that means is, like, if Collins is facing out the goals and he's looking to his left, right, he'll put the ball to grass and there's just a lad coming laterally. You know, it's a Harrandy, it's a Barrett, it's a Fitzgibbon, and it's very hard to mark that, because you can mark, as I always say, you can mark space or mark the man. You can't mark both. So Cork are really good at kind of creating both situations. But then in the same sense, when they went man down, obviously, it had a huge impact on their game, their style of play, because it allowed Clare, obviously, to push up. When Clare pushed up, then they had a numerical advantage at the back, and Cork's book out was kind of snuffed, because, yes, you go short, but when you get pushed up, short is gone. You have to go long where there's a numerical disadvantage. So that brought Clare right back into it. So I think when Murph touched on a while ago as well, the Barrett incident, he's young, he has to learn. It's a harsh lesson. You can't, regardless of the force of impact, regardless of how, you know, the low level of damage that was done, you just can't do it. You can't do it. And it is a red card. You just can't do it. So that's a harsh lesson for him.
Yeah, that's it, Murph. For me, it's just silly. You put your arm back like that, referee's got a decent enough view, the official's got a decent view. Like, you're asking for trouble.
And that's it. Yeah, it's just asking for trouble. It's not that there was any significant or any damage done. It's more a point that he raised the hand. I don't think even the hurl got involved, but for the referee, like, Liam Gordon could only get one look at it and he just had to make a decision. The linesman could only get one look at it. I actually understand Barrett's frustration, though, at the same time, because he would have felt that in the heat of the moment, there wasn't a whole lot done. But I think when he looks at it once, the blood cools down and he's showing it back, and Pat Ryan shows it to him. He's like, you made the referee and the linesman make a decision. And they're more inclined, when they're asked to make a decision, to go red card than anything. And I think once he cools down, he'll go, that was a silly thing for me to do. Another point, which we're kind of slowly touching on at the moment, I also think that the refereeing over the weekend was really good, because we've been critical of the refereeing, let's say, with Sean Stack's four red cards a few weeks ago. We've been trying to be balanced, saying when it's fair or when it's good and when it's poor in decisions. Obviously, something we saw yesterday was that the refs were mic'd up, and actually that was very clever that the commentators could hear it. I think if you introduced that and you allowed the supporters to hear it straight away, I think it actually puts the referees under a bit of undue pressure, in that, you know, they're refereeing on the field, and one slip of the tongue in terms of how they're communicating to a player suddenly gets misconstrued on social media, and, you know, you have a little bit of a storm. But, you know, hearing Brendan Cummins and hearing Tommy Walsh on GAA Plus saying, you know, oh, I can hear what he's saying there. He's being really calm. He's talking to the players. Like, I really like that. Like, it's great to hear that the commentators are communicating to the public watching, saying that, oh, what Liam Gordon is after saying here, what Thomas Walsh is after saying. But anyway, across the board, I just thought the officiating over the weekend in two really tough matches, because there wasn't many hard decisions in Kilkenny and Galway, In the two Munster matches, you know, I thought it was really good.
That way.
And yeah, I know, yeah. But one of the things that dawned on me is, like, you know, in these good games, think of any game, really good game we've had over the last few years. We'll just pick the last 5 years. The first victim in all of it is nearly the referee. Like, you go back, and the best Munster final we've seen in a long time was, geez, I'm trying to even think of which one it was now, but I know it was Clare.
The John Keane and Let's It Go Loose Cork, or Clare and Limerick game.
John Keane, know. He was the first victim in all that, unfortunately, even though I think the public outcry, I'd say, was brilliant. Let's say from a neutral point, people were saying it was brilliant. Think of any of the matches then more recently where there have been really good games. It's not that the referee is trying to involve themselves. They just happen to officiate a really good game and let it flow. Yeah. Was there wrong decisions at times? Absolutely. That's going to happen. But I just, you know, there's no point in, we don't, particularly on this, jump on referees needlessly. But it's just important to highlight that we had two brilliant games, and the officials were actually involved in that in a really good way. So just, you know, it's good to make a point of it as well, that I just thought that, you know, it's not just the players here, it's the referees that are great weekend.
Sides were level only for the second time, obviously, aside from when the game starts. So the third time if you take no score at the start of the game, with the Dalton free. There was a few Clare supporters, Skell, who felt that maybe it was a soft one. Did you think it was a free-in?
I had the same thing noted, Murph, in terms of, or Will, that Murph was saying, in terms of refereeing. I thought the performances were very good across the board. Referees aren't going to get every decision correct. Now, I'm not saying the decision at the end is not correct. I thought it was. I thought it was correct, to be fair. I thought the arms were high. I thought there was a pull of the jersey. I thought it was a high arm. Straight up, I thought it was. I didn't think it was as bad as the Shanahan foul up the other end. That was a more severe one, but it's still a free nonetheless, you know. And it's a bit like the Wheeler, I don't know who won at the end. That's the throw. That's I know there's not many of them given, but that's a free. That's just a free. Yeah. So it's good to see it getting called. And in the same instance, there was a lot of frees that didn't go given yesterday. And I was just going to touch on the Barrett situation. Do you think it's a culmination of all the attention they get? Do you know what I'm trying to say? It looks like both defences. So we're talking Cork and Clare. So both sets of defenders, they give a lot of attention, if you know what I mean, you know, to the opposition.
Oh, yeah.
And it's attention that we can't see, or nor can we hear. So when I see that kind of incident with Shane Barrett, I'm wondering, is that just the culmination of an afternoon of attention? Do you know what I mean?
So probably.
Like, he has to learn about this. But my point being is that an awful lot of stuff doesn't go punished. So the ref, and it's a difficult one to referee, because you've got two, you know, flipping high-flying teams, extremely fit, extremely strong, fast, you know what I mean? Hitting tackles like 100 miles an hour. So if you were to give every technical free that's in the rule book, you know, if you were to give it, the game would be a game of freeze, straight up. Like, as an old ref here in Galway used to say, do you want a game of hurling or a game of freeze, lads? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like, there was an awful lot of instances that went across every game that didn't get given. And we're happy with that. I'm happy with that. Like, I'm okay as a hurling supporter to know that it's on the edge, right? And it teases over the edge at times. Of course it does. And it doesn't go unpunished. Grant, I'm happy with that. So I think the referee performance across the board were very positive.
Yeah, I think if I'm Brian Lowen, I want my defenders to be given plenty of niggle to Shane Barrett throughout the game. You don't want them to be getting there.
I do too. Like, and you know what? I'm watching Adam Hogan, right? And like, he's, as Jordan Ann said about John Gardner one time, you hate him, but you'd love to have him. You hate him, but you'd love to have him. And he just looks like that guy that's just talking to you all day, like, you know, all day in your ear, poking you in the back, stepping on your toes, all this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? The dark arts of cornerback, Murph, you can touch more on that. But like, you hate him, but you'd love to have him. And he's like an antagonist. Like, he'd drive you cracked looking at him.
There was one part there, to include Adam Hogan, where Michael Dignan was completely confused. And I understand Dignan's point. So when Alan Connolly, I think, hit Adam Hogan a dunt, we saw a bit of a view from behind the goal. We didn't see a whole lot. And we saw Ivor Gilligan run to the umpires to say, listen, lads, did you see that there? Whatever. And Liam Gordon comes in, he gives two yellow cards. Now, in fairness, Michael Dignan was like, I hate that. I hate when they give two yellow cards to lads. Like, Alan Connolly hit Adam Hogan. I would say, yes, but to play devil's advocate here, I guarantee Liam Gordon hit the umpire and said, what happened there? And he said, well, Adam Hogan's at him all day. And like, that in itself is not a booking. And I understand there's Clare fans pulling their hair out here saying, that's not a booking. But as a cornerback, I've been in a situation where you're right up tight, sticking on a fella, and there's no one instant where you're necessarily fouling, but you're maybe instigating a little bit. Like, you know, like, as in you're just pulling and dragging, and it's cumulative. You've accumulated enough value club points to get a yellow card. It's like super value. You've accumulated enough. You now get 10% off your shot. You're now getting a yellow card because you've done enough for that fella to hit you a shot. And it's you feel hard done by at the time.
You've done enough for that hit you a shot.
You've maxed out your value club card. You're now getting the yellow. But I'm with Dignan saying, like, yeah, Adam Hogan didn't do anything the time Alan Connolly did it. But I guarantee if he went in, the umpire was probably looking at that for about 20 minutes, 15 minutes. I can't remember when it happened. And went, oh, sure, look, the two boys are in each other's faces all day. It was probably more of a thing of saying, well, if I give the two boys yellows, they now both have to be on their best behaviour to an extent. Like, there's a game management part there with Liam Gordon as well. And again, I'll say the line. I know there's people pulling their hair out listening to this saying, but the other thing is that there's an actual dirty stroke pulled because lads are taking it too far. And then when a dirty stroke is pulled, people then would say, you weren't going in and actually managing the lads. And again, the other thing, Dignan did say when he heard, I'm fairly sure when I listened back to it, Dignan did say that he could hear what Gordon was saying to the two lads. He was just talking to him, explaining what was happening. So look, I understand both yellow cards. And to be fair, it kind of did put a bit of manners on both of them for a while, like, you know. So it maybe saved an extra lag getting sent off.
Two more points before we move east and talk about what happened in Semple Stadium. The kick that Clare got from the bench, Skell. So we talked a lot about Cork's strength and depth and the amount of players they have. From the bench, they got 1 point from Declan Dalton, proved to be a very important one, the free at the end, and Brian Roach got a point. But Shane Kingston came on, Dermot Healy came on in the last 10 minutes, they didn't score. While Clare got a load of change from their players that came in. So Ian Galvin scored 2 points, Shanahan wins that crucial free. They made three subs. And they got Keane Galvin on. He was on for Ryan, obviously the early one. But Ian Galvin and Shanahan particularly, Shanahan wins the important free. Galvin pops over a lovely couple of lovely scores from play during the game as well. Maybe we underrated Clare's strength and depth here as well.
Well, look at it in that particular performance. Let's say we've seen Shanahan come into games before, and the one that sticks out in my mind as well is the Limerick one, the day of John Connolly's brother's wedding, where he came on and, you know, just caused disruptions in there in the full forward line. His ability to retain ball is of vital importance in these tight championship games where you need to retain the ball. Like, every possession in a full forward line is like, it's worth a couple of points when you manage to keep it up there. So for kind of the output he got, like, he was fouled. I know he got, you know, he's fouled a couple of times. Galvin got a couple of points. So they probably knocked, you know, in all terms, probably 4 or 5 points out of them, just the two boys, which is a great impact to spring in, especially when you're missing someone of the caliber of Shane Donnell too. So, like, I'm thinking, I strongly assumed that the Cork bench was stronger, the Cork squad was stronger, they'd finish stronger, because we saw the array of formations and even different levels of player they had throughout the course of the league. Like, it was a rarity we saw the same six forwards, you know, both in successive games. So we're thinking that points to a strong squad. And then it was clear they pointed it out. They willed it out to say, and look, not to touch on this too much, but I think Pat Ryan would be actually happy. You know what I mean? I think there's an awful lot of course, and it's deserved. There's loads of hype around Cork because it's deserved, because they've been shooting the lights out. Their forwards have been seriously impressive. They were conceding no goals. Then the forwards hit a bit of a lull yesterday for about 20 minutes, you know, near the end after a fantastic performance, and then conceding goals. So it's like, you know, this is not too bad. They got a point. I didn't believe him when he said, if he offered me a point, I'd take it. I didn't believe him. I thought they were going so well, he was coming for two. You know what I mean? But I'd say in the grand scheme of things, you know, when you take that 5 minute window there at the end of the game, he would have taken a point. He'd absolutely take a point. Just get out of town, alive, take a point, and then try not drop any more points going forward. So, because Clare will take points off you. They'll take points of other teams, and I think Cork will be content. Now, they might look back and say, we lost it from a very, very, you know, fortuitous position where we're 12 points up, but the sending off had a massive, massive bearing in the game for me, like, huge. Like, if they stay 15-15, I don't believe Clare come back. No way. I don't see it happen. I still believe it's going to be a 6 or 7 point victory for Cork, but that's sending off. So I think Pat Ryan, and keeping your team honest, keep looking for areas to improve all the time, this is a great point. This is a great point to look back and say to yourself, right, we're good, but we can certainly have room for improvement here.
Yeah, that's my final point in this one, Murph. I actually thought when Tim O'Mahony's long-range point goes over, it was 9 points, I think, they were up at that stage. They were still 8 up 3 or 4 minutes later. So really, kind of 11, 12 minutes down the stretch, you're expecting Cork, even a man short, to probably close this out. We've praised Clare hugely for what they did, the way they rallied. They showed, you know, all of the signs and qualities of a champion by being able to come back. But should we be hard on Cork for the way that they drifted out in the last 20 minutes?
Would you be hard on them? There's a type of maturing that only happens in the championship that you don't get during the league. And the reason I say that is because I'm thinking back to Skettle when he took back a 10-point lead from us in Tullamore in 2014 in the Leinster semi-final. During a match when the team gets momentum on you, if you're not prepared for it, you're goosed. Like, you can't stop it. But I agree with Skettle. When Barrett got sent off, if Barrett's still on the field, Clare and Cork are still 15-15, but once they were able to free someone up and Cork started just to panic a small bit and lump ball down where John Conlon was standing, it kept giving Clare that launching pad to go up and get another attack, get another attack. Whereas even if a period happened where there was a stalemate for 2 or 3 minutes, and like that suits Cork to the ground, that they just kind of see this out. But once Clare were coming at them in waves and they lost their shape a small bit and they were getting the breaks and they were up in your face, it's very hard to stop that on the field. It's extremely hard to stop it. So what I would say is, Cork will be hard themselves. They'll be the first lads who are hard themselves to say that, lads, we need to see this game out. But we also need to be prepared that from now on, we have a 10-point lead. That doesn't mean we get to start flicking it back into fourth gear there or third gear and try and see it out. Like, if we want to be All-Ireland champions, we have to sprint through the finish line. You'll often hear lads saying that, like, you know, whether it's a strength and condition coach or whatever, you're sprinting through the line, let the referee blow the whistle, don't pull up and start kind of thinking you're going to tap balls over against Clare down in Ennis and going to win the game. I'd say that's where Clare or Cork will come at it from. But I wouldn't be inclined to buy into the camp yet now of anyone saying that oh, Cork are fragile or anything like that. Like, this was this can happen to any team on any given day. It happened to Clare last year at this stage. So, and they went on to be All-Ireland champions. So turn around and say, like, the fairness to Cork, they went up the end, and the hardest point in the whole game to get was that free at the end in terms of getting the ball. McInerney caught it, and they managed to turn it over, get it.
And threw it.
Did he throw it? I think
100% threw that ball. Come on. Sorry.
I actually think you're right now that you're going back to it. Yeah. But nevertheless, like Cork did what was necessary there to get a draw. And like that I wouldn't, I suppose, be too flippant about that either. That situation where a team is coming at you relentlessly and you just need to get one score, Cork did it and it was necessary and they did it in the moment. So I will say that actually, I think Clare obviously took way more from this. But I don't think, if anything, this is going to keep our Cork honest. I think it's going to stand to them where Pat Ryan can turn around and say, now, lads, you think it was all going to be a year away? And what I think would have served Cork far worse would have been the beating that they gave to Clare during the league in Ennis. If they gave that to him yesterday, I think it would have done him far worse to be going forward into a championship thinking, really have this figured out. Do you know? Like, they got a kick in the arse. Yeah. They got a kick in the arse and they got a point out of it away from home. It's not too bad. Do you know?
It's a healthy lesson, like, isn't it?
Completely.
It's a great position to go into that you performed for, let's say, 60% of the game really well.
Yeah.
You clawed back, you know, a point. I think it was Kieran Joyce that actually won the free.
Yeah.
So like you had a guy who just gambled, go for it. And pulled the free out of the bag. So like you're looking at it, and there's probably, I hate to use the word negative, but there was loads of negatives from Cork's perspective yesterday that they can focus on and work on. But the huge positive was they came out alive.
Right, so Cork against Tip this week, and we've got Clare making the trip to Waterford. We'll look ahead to both those games on the members pod this week as well. Let's go to the game at Semple Stadium. This is a cracker. 2:23 apiece. Teams are level 12 times. John McGrath with a couple of bangers of goals for Tipperary. Adam English with a beautiful, the other one-handed goal from the weekend that probably stands out, putting it between the legs of Hogan as he was coming out. The Bull got the freedom at different times for Limerick during the game as well. Nicky Quaid coming back out of nowhere, Skell. We didn't think he was going to be anywhere near fit for the start of the championship.
I had to go investigate. So
what have you found out?
They rehabbed his knee, not like a normal athlete in terms of running. Right. They weren't planning for running. So they rehabbed it in terms of impact. Let's put you in this bracket here, Murph. Just what doesn't happen to you, but if you did tear your ACL, right, you're obviously going to be hitting high level sprints and off that during a game.
Yeah.
So the amount, the type of recovery and rehab you have to do is focused on that, obviously. Whereas Nicky's rehab was focused on impact. Let's say a knee hitting the ground and lateral movement side to side.
Okay.
So that's what, again, what I'm led to believe was how he came back so quickly. So if you asked him to sprint up the pitch, he'd be saying, don't. Yeah. But did you notice as well when he came out? He came out in the second half, lads, to take a ball. He looked a small bit laboured.
I did wonder. One breakout and Tipperary kind of swarmed around him, yeah.
Yeah, he looked a small bit laboured.
Yeah, it was definitely one time when I saw him coming out, and I was thinking about it then, like, as in, you look at the semi-finals last year, the four keepers were outstanding, and invariably all of them had to come off the line at some stage, and, like, be athletic coming off the line. It wasn't just a case of wander out. Look at Kilkenny and Galway, the first goal. It was kind of this into no man's land coming out and getting caught in between. Like,
31.
You know? Yeah, and so once I saw Nicky Quaid come off the line, going, obviously, puck out to be outstanding, shot stopping is going to be top class. But the thing is that, nevertheless, any player does their cruciate. I'm not going to say they're not 100% after 5 months in terms of maybe confidence, but physically also. And maybe it's just something that, the Limerick backroom team know more than me, but I was just looking at it going, there's a weakness there in terms of him coming off the line. That is no disrespect to Nicky, but you know, you're just looking at it going, any human is going to be vulnerable there. And is it a small bit of a weakness where you go, well, does potentially Shane Dowland come back into the equation there? Because I think, fairness, Shane Dowland was probably going to start, and Shane Dowland at least can come out and get involved in tackles there, where if he has to get caught in no man's land, he can get involved. Nicky probably just isn't at that stage yet. And again, I hold my hand up by saying I don't know where he's at in terms of...
This is why I don't understand, right? So we're talking about 5 months recovery in the championship game. But for him to be up to the pace of a championship game, to even put himself in the mode of selection, he has to have done, let's say, 4 weeks. Or 5 weeks of training. He has to have tested his knee in every manner possible as a goalkeeper. So like that means he returned in 4 months. Do you know what I mean? In my head.
Yeah.
So like he's here after 5 months, right?
Yeah. Do you remember the interviews after the Galway game and they said that he was back in doing a bit of individual recovery, whatever.
Wasn't the Bull?
It was the Bull who led us
out to dry.
Murphy said, "Oh, Jesus, I say Kylie across at him."
But when Kylie confirmed it afterwards, and I know Kylie kind of played it down on TG Carr that night, and he was saying, "Oh, he's doing some work, and we're glad to have him back in around the place," kind of thing. Yeah. I'm guessing that Nicky Quaid was doing a lot more work than Limerick were letting on.
Well, you're probably right, but I thought at the time, let's say, he was just doing a bit of rehab exercise, maybe a bit on the bike. That was the extent of it. I didn't think we'd see him for the championship, truthfully speaking. Like, because every ACL injury I've ever seen around the place is always 9 months to a year. Well, nine months was always...
Sheehan, maybe. Like, I think Dan Sheehan was remarkable, but again, that was like the very best of professional recovery.
But you're talking about professional athletes with professional recovery with professional time. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, Nicky has to go to work. Nicky has to do all this kind of stuff where the recovery time for an amateur athlete, I think, is different. Even though you'd say, look, it's the human anatomy, it should be all the same. But the manner in which they recover is different because the level of access, the level of resource, that's just the way it is. So I would have always associated 9 months. No, I'm not, as I said, I'm not a surgeon or doctor. Just that's how long it seems for lads to come back. If a lad gets injured in March or in ACL, you're saying, right, he's back next March. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's where it is in my head. Whereas for Nicky, it's an astounding recovery. And I hope we don't see him get injured. I hope they've done their due diligence. As you said, Murph, we're not medical professionals. There's very professional staff down there. I'm assuming they've done all the, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's and tick the boxes to get that man back on the pitch. Because again, there's a welfare issue here too. Because the player, sometimes you have to save the player from himself. You know, we see all the time with head injuries. You have to kind of take that, you know, onus off the player and put it onto the medical professionals. So I'm assuming the same thing was done this instance.
Yeah. Pretty remarkable stuff. So the team's level 12 times across the game. This is a real cracker as well. We were treated to another really good one. My GA Plus died at one point, so I did miss about 3 or 4 minutes of the first half. But once I eventually refreshed, it seemed a lot of people, it wasn't the 30-odd thousand that were in Semple Stadium, wanted to watch this one. And about 2 minutes into the game, it crashed for a few people, based on what I put up on Twitter asking anyone else had problems. But there's an awful lot to dig into here. There's thrown passes, which are going to come up as part of our conversation here as well. But can I ask you, Murph, first of all, about how Tipperary responded? Because anyone really who was sunk after the league final thought, you know what, actually, maybe we've overestimated Tip a little bit during the league. Maybe that was the real Tipperary that we saw in the league final at Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Tipperary, obviously, last year disappointed by their own standards in the championship. And yet we saw a big response from them yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, a really strong performance. Probably the best performance from a Tipperary team in 3 or 4 years, I would think. I'm open to correction or any Tipperary supporter who wants to say they had a better performance. But the two things for me that really stood out for them was their tackling was outstanding as a group, not just kind of as one player or individually getting caught or whatever. As a group, they were very tenacious in the tackle. And then their movement of the ball through and around Limerick at times was really good, like really tight spaces. They were turning back, they were popping those short passes. And that's something, again, we've probably spoken about several times, where it's not something you can just turn on in one season. It does take a few seasons. It's a natural evolution of the game that every team is trying to do at the moment. Tipperary, no more than Kilkenny, no more than Galway, whoever. It takes different times, and then managers change also. So like the learning of it changes as well. But it's something that Liam Cahill has been trying to work into his teams. And we saw the first real flickers of it in Championship yesterday from Tipperary. They were really, really good. All over the field, they just looked very confident. They used their bench really well as well. Like, they used their five subs, where Limerick only used two. And I think it's probably a comparison we can draw between Clare and Cork, where we would have said, you know, Cork's bench will have the biggest influence. Clare's bench had the biggest influence. Who had the biggest influence from the bench over the weekend between Limerick and Tipperary? And it really looked like Tipperary wanted to sustain their efforts coming over the finish line, where it nearly looked like Limerick were kind of a little bit more hesitant to disrupt their player. I'm not really sure what it was, but using two subs when you have a bench the caliber of what you have, for me, I would have thought maybe one or two more lads would have came on. But like Liam Cahill said after game as well, you know, Tip aren't back. I find it brilliant. Like every team, I know we're traditional in the GA, we want to talk our teams down, but for the last few years, obviously, like, people are looking for the green shoot to say, yes, Tipperary are back. And at the moment, a lot of Tipperary fans are saying, no, we're not back. We're not back yet. And then Cork fans are also saying, no, we're not favourites for the Ireland. There's no way. We're not favourites. Don't look at us. But I'd agree with Liam Cahill in that this doesn't mean that Tip are back. Like, it's a great stepping stone. I think that's literally the word he used. It is, because it's one game. It's also one game, whereas if we were to look at Limerick, they weren't their peerless selves. They weren't absolutely perfect. They hit a lot of wides. They won't be happy, like, you know, Tom Morrissey and Gerard Hegarty and Kyle Hayes and these guys. They weren't as effective as we normally see them. Mm-hmm. So it's not to detract from Tipperary's performance. But you can only imagine that the question for Limerick will they get better? You'd imagine they will, to an extent. To what extent will they get better over the championship is the next question. But what Tipperary faced yesterday They gave both barrels to Limerick. They really did a lot of their running. And I mean, like, as in terms of they took charge of the game for quite a bit. They were it took the 17th minute before Limerick actually got ahead. And after that, Tipperary still kicked on and went in 3 points ahead at halftime. And this thing that we talk about in the second half of where Limerick come out and traditionally steamroll Tipperary didn't happen. And Tipperary again made all the run-ins in the second half and didn't look like letting up. It was just a really good performance. And I think what a lot of Tipperary fans will take from it is just that that's a performance you can get on board with. You know, you can look at that and say, lads, if we can do that against Tipperary in the first round, regardless how the rest of our championship goes, it bodes well for Tipperary over the next while, because those lads like Darren McCarthy and Sam O'Farrell and these boys are coming into the team. It looks like that they're headed in the right direction and they'll get stronger. Like, they had 4 debutants yesterday, which is a big thing. That can serve to maybe disrupt your performance, but it didn't. You know, they were really good. So I think for Tipperary people in particular, they'll be looking at this going, I'm really happy with that. We'll absolutely take the draw. If there's one team over the weekend that will take the draw, is that first round against Limerick in Thurles. You've gotten a draw. You've given 4 debutants. You used 5 lads off the bench and you could have won the feckin' thing. You're happy enough with that. And we'll give one shout out to one of your friends, Richie Carroll from Carrick, who backed the draw. I said, I told him for the game. He sent a message to me, tip man. So he backed the draw, but I think he'll take it. But he just said to me, what do you reckon? I said, I think Limerick by 6. And he was like, you could be right, but, you know, I'd be happy with the draw. And they got the draw. So I think of the 4 teams who got a draw the weekend, absolutely, I think Tipperary are the happiest. Not from a negative point of view, but genuinely, if Liam Cowell says, I would have taken the point before today, absolutely would have taken the point.
Yeah. I'll give you a better one there, Murph. Michelle's mother-in-law, she did the double.
No way.
2 draws.
She put €2 and got and 2 draws and got €300.
Fair play. Jesus, great bet. €2 and 2 draws.
Yeah, I heard it was 131, so she got 150 somewhere. Wow.
Like €2 and got 300 bob back.
That's such an anti bet, isn't it? €2.
Like,
€2.
Like,
class. Yeah. Fair play.
I'm sick and I missed it. Paddy Power had Cathal Mannion. I think it was
Cathal Mannion again.
Was it 2-1 or something, or 3-1 that he scored 4 points or more?
And he got about 9 or 10, did he?
She was free tech. Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he did. Yeah, he was
obviously, Paddy Power didn't realize he was on the freeze. I was sitting there, isn't it?
I don't think anyone realised he was. We won't jump ahead too far, but I didn't think anyone realised he was going to freeze until he was in the warm up doing them. Because I was really pondering. There you go. I didn't know. So I made 2 mistakes in fantasy, by the way, and I do have the league details up on last week's YouTube. I'll stick them up on this one as well. If anyone wants to join in, I think I got the league set up about 45 minutes before fantasy started on Saturday. But I noticed a lot of people were streaming into play. I made 2 mistakes in my draft team. I forgot to take TJ out after the news is confirmed that he's out for a month with that calf injury, so I left him in. I did have Lee Chin as captain, though, and he got 16 points, so that was all right. That paid off a little bit. But the other one was, I was considering putting Cathal Mannion in because I wondered who was going to hit the Galway freeze based on the team that was named. But my worry was that we were going to get a... Yeah, but I thought there was going to be the old Fogra before throw-in scale where you hear the old classic, which is Conor Cooney comes in to start. And you're like...
Oh. I was certain that was going to happen. When I saw the team selection, I said, geez, no, that can't be the team because we've no... You know, I suppose I was going to say reputable. You know that we know intercounty level, but he didn't miss a beat.
Can I just say at this point, Tipperary people are now shouting at us because we've gone off to Tipperary Limerick.
Sorry,
but I'm just being.
Just, what about Darren McCarthy? What about him?
Yeah. Oh, here, outstanding, unbelievable. What did he get? Did he get 8 points? And he got 3 from play, 5 frees.
After playing for the 20s midweek.
Yeah, yeah. When you're talking about professional sport, right, and you talk about the fastest way to improve your team, it's always through recruitment. Mm-hmm. So, like when you talk about debutants, right, and if they make the impact like Darren McCarthy, you're immediately your team is better than it was. Mm. You know what I mean? So like that's from a Tipperary perspective. When you set the point that they'd be the happiest of all the teams, I fully wholeheartedly agree with you because where they came from. So they took a bit of a beating, obviously, in the league final. Battled hard towards the end, right? Took a bit of a beating and then managed to you know, put a real heart show. Because the way I was looking at the league final was I had said myself that there was a tactical issue in terms of their set piece, the puck out, you know?
Yeah.
But yesterday, their puck out was really positive. Like they didn't nail it 80%, but they got 70% of the puck out, which is a huge platform for success. And they didn't allow Limerick to hammer them on their puck out. Yeah. So it was like, if you're looking for areas of positivity for Tipperary, yes, you focus on debutants, but also to be able to mix it from a tactical perspective on the puck out, because Limerick attack your puck out all the time. They use the turnover. They shoot and shoot and shoot because they're good on your puck out. So they allow you to puck it out, basically. So for Tip to be able to advance that, you know, is a huge positive, because the further they go down through the championship, I often find the teams with the best set piece in terms of puck out, you know, will go a long way to win the game.
Yeah. Just in terms of the lads who started for Tipperary, and you mentioned the four lads. So you've got Robert Doyle, Joe Caesar, McCarthy, and Sam O'Farrell. So yeah. O'Farrell and McCarthy have played for the Tip 20s, and they're probably going to be very heavily involved in the rest of their campaign as well. So a bit of a balancing act for them. The two guys who started first games for Limerick, it's a totally different situation. Those guys are fairly new and fresh. Like Colin Coughlin's been around the panel quite a while. He's played, even though it hasn't been from the starting championship. And Barry Murphy would have played 7-8 years ago, I think, for Limerick, and he's been around and about. It's just the fact that it's hard to dislodge Sean Finn and Barry Nash in the other corner. So they're bringing in two very experienced guys to start. And again, it's when Tom Morrissey comes in before the game for Colin O'Neill, it doesn't feel like they weaken him in any way. Mm. While Tip definitely had a fresher feel about it with the players that came in. There's plenty to talk about from a Limerick perspective. So Murph, take the point here on all through the league, we're being conditioned to the idea that Kyle Hayes is going to be the six. Looks like he's going to be replacing him. Again, I don't know where Hannon is at. He said a few weeks ago in interviews, he's nearly back, but we're not quite sure. So it looked like Hayes was going to be the starter at six. And then next thing, Hayes goes up to the forward line and Will O'Donoghue sits back in at six. I still think that Will O'Donoghue at six is not getting the best out of Will O'Donoghue's skill set.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And that's, I think, more of an indication of how good he is at midfield. Like, him at midfield is the best midfielder in the country. So it's kind of a thing of, we have the best midfielder, put him in there and figure it out around him. You know, figure it out. And for me, I also think that Kyle Hayes running towards goal as opposed to starting out the way, like, I know he's one all-stars from up further up the field, but when you start him and his running path from the half back line midfield direction heading up, I think that's his best position as well. So, like, maybe Limerick, and sure, again, they're working off what they see in training and, you know, what they can gauge there. Maybe they feel that Kyle Hayes is best utilized other places. Is Colin Coughlin, is he any good at centre back in terms of doing, he's a similar style of play to Will O'Donoghue in that big physical player, gets around, gets involved, wins the ball. But I just can't, like, the disruption that Will O'Donoghue causes at midfield, he doesn't get the same out of that at centre back. Obviously enough, because he has to be concerned about what's going on around him, what's going on behind. He has a bit more free rein when he's at midfield. So dropping him back to centre back, I think you weaken the structure of your team automatically by virtue of the fact that he's just better at midfield. So I don't expect to see the same Limerick team deployed very much during this round robin in terms of their exact positions. Like, we're going to see probably, like, Keane Lynch was at midfield for the weekend, dropping up towards centre forward, etc. Like, there's going to be small changes, but the biggest one they're going to figure out is Declan Hannon coming back? If so, right, he drops into six. But if he's not, well, who is actually going to do that role at the number six position? The other option is, which is a bolter of a one, you've Sean Finn sitting on the bench. I know Skelly likes bolters. Sean Finn is sitting on the bench. Do you push Barry Nash out? Because yesterday, quite a bit of the run-ins that were made from the backs of Limerick driving up the field was Barry Nash. You know, Barry Nash was coming out with balls. He was calm at all times. He made great tackles. He's so comfortable out around that middle area. You know, if you're happy enough to move Kyle Hayes from wing back to centre forward, are you happy enough to move Barry Nash from left corner back out to centre back? That's not as big a change, you know. And I just think that Barry Nash is such a good hurler that may be the thing. If Declan Hannon isn't coming back, maybe there's something there. But again, Barry Nash is so exceptional at left corner back. Do you leave him there? Because he still runs up the field, covers 100 metres, pops the ball over the bar and gets back into position. So it is a tough one. But to go back to your point, Will, yeah, I just think Will O'Donoghue, midfield all day. If I'm a manager and I have a chance to pick him, I'm lobbing him in midfield and figure out the number six situation a different way.
Yeah, because to me, Skelly just felt like they had found the right combination during the league, which is Will O'Donoghue and Adam English. That was their midfield. Yeah. Seemed to work really well. Darragh Donovan is still finding his way back. He was one of those six All-Stars who was sitting on the bench watching on yesterday. So until he's ready to come back in, I just think you keep those two together as your pairing.
Yeah, and I think it's very important to state, and Murphy did touch on it, we're not saying Will O'Donoghue is a bad centre-back. We're saying he's an exceptional midfielder. And you're right, in terms of his role, right, he's probably the premier type midfielder in the country. That, like, obviously you've got runner midfielders, you've got shoot midfielders, but in terms of him just basically wrecking everything in midfield, you know what I mean, like an enforcer. He's fantastic at it, and there are a finite number of players in the country that can play number of positions as effectively as each other. So like Hayes is one. He's as effective at wing back as he is centre forward. You know, I'd put Barry Nash in the same bracket too, like we're talking about the hybrid recently. Will O'Donoghue is more effective in midfield, in my opinion. It looks like, in our opinion, he's more effective at midfield. And midfield is so important nowadays because that's where an awful lot of the action happens. You know, if you've got a good midfielder that can break up ball there with runners, you know, which we've seen with Limerick in the past, it's a platform. It stops teams. So you made a good point. Well, the recipe was there in the league. And Adam English, he took to form. He performed admirably yesterday. He was fantastic again, let's say. And that partnership seemed to be, you know, set in stone. And we had commented, let's say, last week that we couldn't see Imagine O'Donovan getting back on the team. Evidently, didn't know. So that goes to show the effectiveness of that pairing throughout the course of the league. So to see O'Donovan at centre back was a big surprise. You know, we saw it once, and we saw it against Galway a couple of years ago in the semi final, didn't we, when Declan was injured?
Yeah, he popped in at the tail end of that campaign.
That just looked like a bit of an emergency situation, obviously. But in this instance, I don't see it as being an emergency. Like, I'll be having midfield now. That's a good shout for Nash. And we never see Burns taken out of his position, ever. You know what I mean? So does he play centre back for the club? I presume he does. You know, are you taking away one of your big weapons by putting him centre back? You probably are. You know what I mean? Yeah. In terms of your shooting prowess and the pockets of space he gets into, case in point, the last point. You know, let's say if he's at six, he might get through to that. But it just goes back to the question: where is Jack Lennon? You know what I mean? It's like, it's no news. Obviously, they keep their business very quiet, as we know, especially with Nicky. Is he hurt? Is he available? Is he training? I've tried to figure out this. I've tried to find out. I can't. It's a closed shop up there. So, Will, you need to find out this stuff. Come on.
We'll try and find out. I was just on the Burns point, which is very similar to the Hayes point, because I asked Murph's club mate Richie Hogan about this during the week, and he was speaking about both Hayes and Burns as potentially, you know, sitting in at six. And he was making the point that because both of them are very dominant on the side that they hit the ball from, they're actually much better at wing back than they are at centre half back. He reckons that was one of the benefits that Hannan had, is that Hannan was equally good off both sides, and so he was much better at actually spraying the ball. He thinks you take away one of Burns' strengths if you were to move him out of the right wing back position and put him in at centre half back. But then every team would try and press him on his right side every time he goes to hit it. So maybe there's a certain element to that in there. But six is now an equation that they need to work out, and I just think you're robbing Peter to pay Paul by popping Will O'Donoghue back in there. Again, look, maybe this is something they learn. And the thing about Limerick, I wouldn't disagree at all with what Neil McManus said last night, where he said, I think the phrase he used was, we've seen this movie before, where Limerick maybe look a little bit slow to start in the Munster Championship, or they're feeling their way into the Championship a little bit, but invariably you can set your watch by them that come the last few rounds, they're going to be at top speed. It's just helps them find their way through to there.
Tell me, Will, you might know this better than I would. It was 2 years ago when obviously the return fixtures, where they played Waterford first, just got out of jail there, and then they drew a Tipperary after. Is that right?
Ooh, we were doing the pod. I think it was 2 seasons ago, yeah.
2 seasons ago, and then they went on to cruise that Ireland, didn't they? Essentially.
Yeah. And everyone wondered that day, and I remember everyone kind of thinking, oh, look, maybe Davy Fitz has actually found the formula of how you press this Limerick team. And I remember that very much being the conversation afterwards, is that they were expected to go and beat Waterford quite handsomely, didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And people had doubts about Limerick, and maybe the hunger wasn't there anymore with Limerick with all they'd won. And then, as you say, they went on to win the All-Ireland Championship. So, I don't know, we'll see how they go. But there was loads of remarkable moments in this game as well. You know, we talk about pieces of skill, Murph. I'm thinking of Aaron Galland's little flick through for Adam English's goal as well. That's a beautiful little, almost no-look pass.
Yeah, yeah. And it was this thing where all eyes are on Galland. And like, sure, Galland's ability, just to, any time the camera pans down to him, he just has that 2 or 3 yards because he's so deceptive. And I think the knock-on effect for that then is that once he gets out just ahead of you, he's one of those players that just draws attention, because lads are like, well, if we don't get tabs on him here now, he's capable of just popping the ball over the bar. And suddenly Adam English is ghosting in behind a little flick. But it's the intelligence of Galland to know that, well, the flick here now will draw so many players onto me, but if I get that away, there's acres of space behind me. It's that knowledge of just knowing that passes on. I actually saw something similar with Adrian Mullen, I think, set up. I'm trying to think who it was for Kilkenny over the weekend. I think it was Jordan Malloy, where again, two Galway lads were drawn to him, and he was going towards the sideline, and he flicked it back over his head, knowing that the space was behind him. It's just a thing that, you know, players with good awareness, like Galland, like Adrian Mullen, these lads, they just understand what's happening around them. But, you know, it was just so clever that he knew where English was going, flicks it through, and then English, in fairness, got away with it to an extent. Good flick, but you don't really know what's going to happen with a one-handed flick. But probably the best he could do in that scenario. Like, I mean, if he's going to rise it, he probably rises it up into the keeper. He just gets tackled. Probably just had to hope that, worst case scenario, he hits it. You know, it hits him on the ankle or hits him on the calf, breaks on for him again, and he gets to go. The best case scenario is that it just goes straight through his legs, you know. But but even when that goal went in, you just kind of felt, okay, now Limerick are going to kick on here now. So again, it just goes back to credit to Tipperary, how they responded. Like, they brought it back to, I think that goal kicked it on to being 3 points up, or maybe even 2 points up. But Tipperary responded straight away, which was, you know, huge for Tipperary. So, like, despite the fact that those moments, Tipperary responded, which was maybe something we wouldn't have seen out of Tipperary in the last two or three years. So, like, even those small little things like that, how Tipperary responded again was a testament to probably where they're at the moment.
Yeah. Tip have got the set piece taken working out as well now, Skell. So Connolly pops over four monster frees.
Pops.
Well, I suppose he
launches.
He launches.
Explodes off.
Like, just incredible long range striking. If a player like that is, again, that's a weapon. And well, then close to the goal.
He did it from a static stance. So now when you see long range leads, for example, Tony Kelly's long range one, they stand back and take a run at it for force. But Connolly just stands over it.
Yeah.
Lift, wallop, point. It's like, Jesus. Like, and so we'd say the premier set piece taker in the backs over the last 5 or 6 years, more even, has been Jimmy Burns. Like, his efficiency has been very high. The Auriga Hurler of the Year, I don't know how many points he got. Maybe it was 30 something. He got points in, between open play and set piece. So for you to have, let's call it a weapon. Your full back is a weapon now in terms of long range frees. You know, so like we used to be saying, like we used to be delighted when the ball used to go over the line down the forwards or inside midfield, Kennings would score it. It's a weapon. Whereas if you get fouled in your defence now, here, Connolly, pop it over there. And like the conditions weren't, you know, perfect for long range frees. There was a bit slicey, you know, it was a bit damp, etc. So for him to do it with 100% efficiency, it was top drawer. Set piece. And then what you were about to say, I presume, will Darren McCarthy up the foul.
Yeah, five, like, puts over five in the other end, yeah.
But let's talk about the free at the end. You know, like, the kids played Wednesday. Like, he's going to play next Wednesday, I presume. They're playing Watford next Wednesday. They're out next week again. So, like, he's playing, what, four games in 7 or 8 days? You know, so the pressure that was on his young shoulders, again, greasy ball, loads of pressure. Pop it over, no problem. The minute he struck it in on the high behind goal, did you see him? He just put the hand up, started waving it. It's like he knew, yeah, this is easy, lads. But those kind of, when you add in a bit of, like, youthful exuberance, you know, they would, I sometimes believe that the younger the player, he doesn't feel the pressure. You know, this is they're excited to be out in this as Murphy said, cauldron before, whereby it's like just it's a freedom play. So like, if you're standing over that ball, I know if I was taking that free, I'd be going, oh Jesus, I better score this. Do you know what I mean? But I'd say McCarthy is probably stood over and go, yeah, this is definitely going over. It's definitely going over. Yeah. You know, put my name in the paper here. So, but like, his efficiency is fantastic, and it's not. Sometimes we associate free takers with just being that, a free taker, but look at his pace from open play. And he requires an awful lot of attention for defenders. So you can't just look at the 20-year-old and go, ah, we'll take him from play. We'll be all right. No, he won't.
Yeah.
Or did he score three from play?
Yeah. He turned over Adam English as well for one of the scores. I think they got a free out of it, but he went tracking back the field, turned over Adam English, and I think got a free out of it then and popped it over. Yeah. So like, it was, you know, like it's all around. It's not just a case of stepping over freeze.
But tell me now, if you're, interesting question, right? If you're Liam Cahill, right, and you're looking at McCarthy, and you know Tip are playing Watford in the 20s on Wednesday, you would assume Tip would take Watford. Do you tell Brendan Cummins or ask him, don't play Brian McCarthy? What do you do there? Because he's now your linchpin. Like, he's now your most important player in terms of set piece and even open play. He's critical, I'd say.
I think you would ask him, and I think Cummins could say no.
Yeah, what do you do though? It's a very precarious position, because the young lad will tell you, I want to play every game. Of course he will.
Yeah, but it goes back to what you were saying, protecting the player from themselves.
Yeah, because this will be his third game in 7 days, and then he'll have a fourth game in 10 days.
In Páirc Uí against Cork.
Yeah, it's quite a bit, like.
Yeah.
What would you do?
You could just say, listen, what about half an hour for him? Like, and regardless what happens, taking him off after half an hour, because he's going to train anyway on Tuesday night, let's say, if he wasn't playing under 20s, he's going to train anyway and would do the intensity of what 30 minutes of hurling would do. So you'd probably be saying, listen, what about 30 minutes? And explain to him, listen, you're coming off after 30 minutes anyway. And he can go out and go, yeah, I'm going to hurl 30 minutes here now. And realistically, you know, Tipperary have the players there, like, you know, that should be able to facilitate if McCarthy comes off. You know, they do have good players coming through there. So it should be an ability. And, like, it's a tough conversation for Cal and Cummins to have, whether they have it or not. But I guarantee they will have some sort of conversation to understand, like, they have to protect McCarthy as well. Because, like you said, McCarthy will just go out in the field. Even if he has a niggle, he'll go out. So it's kind of a case of, I suppose, them having the grown-up discussion, understanding that they both have the player's best interest and the team's best interest. Because the bottom line is that if McCarthy picks up an injury, sure, he's not there for either of them. So I think it's managing them. And I think a responsible thing of that, the 20s isn't as important as the seniors. That's the bottom line. We've all played 20s, we've all played seniors. It's not as important. So it's a case of saying, listen, half an hour. And even at that, like, you know, if he can come off before that or whatever you think yourself. And I think that's where the conversation starts. Do you know?
Yeah, that last free, Murph, we've seen Will O'Donoghue sometimes play that kind of over-the-top flick-style hand pass, which has been called as a throw. Like, first of all, I guess credit to the three Tipperary forwards to get around him when he was about to launch that ball forward, because I think most people probably expected O'Donoghue gets his ball away and Limerick are going to try and get a score to seal the game up at the other end. Instead, it turned around and gets a free. So it was three thrown balls that were called against Limerick during the game. Mm-hmm. This one, obviously, was the one of the most significance. It's a big call by the officials to actually call it, isn't it?
It was, yeah, it is, and it was a throw ball. Like, even in the moment, I thought it was. And I actually laughed. I text Tommy after, because Tommy was doing the co-commentary. Mm. And sure, the free gets blown, and Tommy does a big dramatic, oh! And it's a very uncommentary-like of you to be doing that. But what was gas was that Tommy felt it maybe wasn't a throw and that it was a big call. But when he saw the replay, he was going, sure, it was a throw, but it almost like he was sounding like he was trying to convince himself that it was actually a throw. It was, like, you know, as in, you could just see there was no pullback. The ball, he just tries to get it away. They argue with the referee, but I think they know they're kind of arguing in vain. But it was a throw. And I think whatever way you break it down, I saw it in the paper there as well, saying that, you know, there was only four, let's say, called in the game, or three or four called in the game, and two of them accounted for two of Tipperary's last 4 points. Something to that extent, anyway. But that doesn't matter. That, like, if they were throws, they were throws, and that's it. When they happened, or the relevance of them in terms of scores coming off them is irrelevant. Like, the referee is only calling the score, and that's it. And let's not forget, McCarthy missed a free maybe 2 or 3 minutes before that, or 4 or 5 minutes before. He missed an important one out, let's say, underneath the cameras. And he could have very easily missed it, but it's not up for the referee to go, well, this mightn't be a free, or is this unfair, or the game's already over. It's no more than the Kieran Joyce one. If it's a free, it's a free. And so what? It's a tough decision. But both decisions were correct, and Will O'Donoghue did throw the ball. So, yeah, that's. I don't think there's much more to take out of it. But again, it goes back to good officiating. They got it right. And I think what a lot of people would have said, though, is that, oh, there was only four called, and that was one of them, that there was actually more throws. Well, you can, that's a different argument if you want to say there was more throws during the game. But I think that the referee, I think Thomas Walsh, whatever he saw, he went to give, and that was it. And the final one, the most contentious one, it was correct. And I think that's where you can leave it at.
Well, you've set me up very nicely for the next question to scale then is, was there one that was missed? So John Kiely feels there was.
Oh.
The second goal for John McGrath. So the sequence is, Noel McGrath gets the ball.
Great play.
Yeah, it was great team goal.
As you extend this, Will, sorry, I'm just going to check this on Twitter now just to see.
No, one, you pull up the video so you can call it now in a second. So Brian O'Mara gets the ball. He flicks off to Jake Morris, who again, I thought was very good, got 4 points during the game. Conor Bowden gets the ball. And when Conor Bowden is putting the ball back to O'Mara, before O'Mara gives the ball to McGrath, John Kiely said afterwards, I'm just reading his quotes here from the Irish Examiner, if you go back and look at this, two key passes out from the shot, there's a throw pass that definitely needs to be looked at. So he felt that Bowe's pass was a throw.
I honestly felt in real time, Will, I didn't notice the throw. Like, in real time when I saw the O'Donoghue incident at the end, I felt that was a throw. Mm-hmm. So I can say, you know, I'm siding with Thomas Walsh here, whereby, you know, I'm agreeing it wasn't a throw. But I didn't study it in very, very, very closely, Murph. So you're going to correct me here now and say it wasn't a throw, aren't you? But interesting, Murph is looking there, right? We played a game at Kilkenny before the senior game, obviously, this weekend. Mm. And the game is 5 minutes on, right? And someone shouts, throw, and the ref just turns, says, don't be at that today. You're all at it.
Yeah.
He didn't call any of them. So it's good to see a referee is actually pulling for a throw. I can't say I felt it was. But look, if Kylie said it and said it publicly, it probably means he didn't say it without foundation. So.
He did. I didn't notice it until a Limerick journalist sent it to me after the game.
Was it?
I actually spotted it in real time. I think it's a questionable one. Murph, what's your take on it?
So the only angle I have here is the actual, unless there's another angle, which I'll look for now in a minute, the only angle I have is the camera up in the stand. Now, the one thing I will say is there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so there's 6 Limerick lads around of them, and none of them even put the hand up. Do you know what I mean? None of them even appeal it. And usually what players will do is that continue the tackle, but at least flag to the referee that, you know, get some sort of a plea in. None of them say it. And with the angle that you were looking at here, I can't see it. So you can't actually see. Conor Bowe has his body in between the ball. There's someone tackling him there. I can't see who it is. I think it's actually, could be Colin. No, it's not Colin Coughlin. But someone's tackling him and you can't see whether it's a throw or not. So if John Kiely had an angle from the sideline, fair enough. But I don't see another angle here that actually shows that it was a throw.
I was going to say, it's inconclusive would be my take.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So unless they've seen it from the stats team and they've got a much better angle, let's say it's a different camera angle that they're looking from, maybe he knows much better than we do. Or maybe what he could see from, you know, the angle that he was on the pitch looking out, maybe he thought it looked like a very clear throw ball. I think it looks questionable, but there's so many that are questionable as to whether they're actually a clean separation between the hand and the strike. I'm not quite sure. It would have been a very hard one to call, I think.
That would have been a hard one to call, and particularly as well, it's not that the referee is looking to for the reaction of players to decide whether it's a free or not, but it's generally a good indication if something happened that you missed it. And nobody reacted there in that one. So I'd be inclined to say that it's very marginal, and at best it's inconclusive. So like, these aren't the ones that we have to die on a hill for, like, you know, as in if, you know, if you can't see it, you can't see it. If it's blatant, fine. But
So Reedy is there, Murphy, and he's kind of, his body is kind of covering the angle of Bow.
Yeah.
So that's why we didn't actually notice in real time.
Yeah. It wasn't talked about on the Sunday game last night either.
Questionable, right, in fairness.
Yeah. I didn't get a different angle of it. So actually, I hadn't noticed, but the person who sent it to me after they were in the press huddle with Kylie. And that kind of drew people's attention to it. So by all means, fire away in the comments, as people did last week, with 70 comments last week, mainly shut up about golf, I believe, was the main comments. No golf talk at all this week, other than responding to that. There were some good comments. I meant to do mean comment replies. Maybe we'll do it another week when we're a bit quieter. But certainly, this podcast has become narcissistic.
I put up a tweet yesterday, Will, and I did it so on purpose, just to hook in a few people who were commenting.
Ah, there was lads biting hard. Jeez. Oh,
I couldn't stop laughing. Like, people were getting so offended by this. Like, relax. It's not that serious.
It was the least offensive tweet, as tweets go, to be fair. Like, I mean,
hurling is better than football.
It was two words and a symbol. That's all it was.
That was it. That's all it was. And lads were going, it turned out, then some lads said football pod better than hurling pod. I said, nope.
Yeah.
Oh, they took it very seriously, so be careful with those mean tweets.
Look, there you go. They're all entitled to their opinion. We'll see what the comments are like this week. I read most of them last week. A lot of angry people. Anyway, not as disappointed as I say Skell was, because you said the red carpet was rolled out at Nolan Park, and then Galway rolled out the red carpet for Kilkenny, it turned out. It's true, though. This was very one-sided. I know Micheál Donoghue said afterwards it was... far from acceptable was the performance we saw from Galway. Is that a fair way of judging the performance, Gal?
Far from acceptable. Certainly far from acceptable. Oh, Jesus. This, I don't know where to start this one. I was hoping we'd skip this game.
Still on time.
Yeah, it's... Let's put it okay. This is our fourth game, let's say, to lose this year by a margin of 12 points.
Yeah.
You know, so when we get beaten heavily. And when you keep getting beaten heavily, it's a sign of one or two things for me. Either A, it's a serious goal from quality, you know, in terms of class between teams, or B, the fight goes. And it's a bit of both, to be honest. I have to be honest about it now. Is this our best 15, or is this probably our, how do I say this now? A statement was made to me after the game the last year, and he's probably a similar age to myself. And he said, in my lifetime, he goes, this is the furthest we've ever been from Ireland. And it kind of took me for a second to think, Jesus, is that actually a true statement? And at the moment, right, where the team is in so-called transition, he's probably correct. You know, he's probably correct that we're very far away from it. But it's probably in the Galway culture where we think we're going to contest every game. That's all I ask for first and foremost. I always say I can take technical errors. I can take, you know, issues with tactics that go wrong, etc. But I can't take a lack of just general fight. You know what I mean? Mm. And that's what it seemed to give us. Like, Kilkenny, it was like a glorified challenge game. And I understand, you know, the situation in Leinster is far different to Munster. I get that. But that performance that we put in on Saturday won't get us out of the group. That's just reality. It won't. And I'm coming at the game now for this weekend, coming against Offaly, going back to Tullamore, and I'm saying, I'm like, Jesus, this is going to be an extremely tough game. Extremely tough game. Like, who's in better form right now? Offaly. It's obvious. Offaly are in better form. You know, they put a better run of results over the last couple of weeks, even though they got beaten in the league final, but still, the way they eked it out. So it's like, I'm kind of approaching this from a bit of concern. Now, to dive into the game itself, right, we were extremely sloppy. And I know, look, from a goalkeeper perspective, Derek won't be happy with the first goal. Yeah. That happens, right? But there was 2 points as well whereby, you know, Darren Morrissey and Gavin Lee dropped the ball with no pressure. 2 points. So now we've given Kilkenny 5 points. 1-2. And then you look at the separation that Mossy Keoghan and Owen Cody had for the couple of goals. Like, he was colossal, lads. Like, I'm not talking about 2 yard separation. I'm talking 10. 10 yard separation in a defense.
They're running in unattended, basically.
I can't fathom it. Like, and so I was sitting behind the goal. at the dressing room side. And so you get a clear indication of what it's like for both full forward lengths, right? And both defensive setups, okay? And so Kilkenny's ability to retain the ball in the full forward line far eclipsed ours. Far eclipsed. So the likes of Cody, Mossy, Billy Ryan was in there. Like, they were, when that ball went in, by Jesus, it was hard to come out. They retained the ball. But we use this word work rate an awful lot in sport, right? And people would always associate work rate with tackles and turnovers. I personally don't, right? Work rate to me is also forwards making these hard runs when there's no offering. Do you know what I mean? You mightn't get the ball, but midfielders making these hard runs. We saw it from Clare and from Cork. Lads just making these hard runs. That's work rate too. And so when you look behind the goal, and I'm watching Cody and I'm watching Mossy, and they're going back and forth and back and forth, keeping the Galway defence occupied the whole time. And they're offering an out ball for their defence, their own defence. And like as Hugh Lawler said it, he said it in his interview after in the Sunday game, and said, it's what should he say, like, Mikey Carey said it, excuse me. He goes, when you hit it into the boys, it just sticks. And I wrote that down. And I said, that to me, like, is an epitome of what, like, the Kilkenny forward line were doing. It just sticks. And if it doesn't stick, right, the effort the Galway had to do to get out of defence was huge. You know what I mean? Just to go, but contrast the far side. And especially in the second half, I was behind Owen Murphy's goal, obviously. And I'm watching Derek Fahey in the goals, right, at the far end. And I see loads of green grass in positions like 10, 12, heading those directions, okay? And I don't see anyone running. There's no one moving towards it. And Derek's in the goal then wondering, where am I going to put this fucking ball? Do you know what I mean? And like, everyone look at the goal and go, oh, he's putting the ball, you know, he's poking in the same place, because the offering is not there. When we spoke about the Cork book out, you know, the offering is there. The Cork forwards are moving like mad. Do you know what I mean? To offer an out ball for Patrick Collins. Whereas in the Galway instance, it didn't happen. Especially in the first half, I think I counted, let's say, was it 17 puck outs and 15 of them went to the right? Do you know what I mean? Down to, like, just, there was no tactical sense to it whatsoever. So, like, our puck out was not a platform for attack, you know. So I could go into so many areas around Galway at the moment and say, right, this is an area for concern. But there's too many. I'm sorry, there's too many. And like this was a walk in the park for Kilkenny. It really was. And even at the time when we were drawn midway through the first half, Kilkenny had five wides in a row. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't as if that this was point for point. It was just Kilkenny had a serious, you know, level above us. And like, I don't know where to turn here, lads. Like, I'm happy to get bet. If we get bet 12 points, at least get bet 12 points with a few debutants. You know what I mean? Put in the likes of, you know, I'm just saying, like, start Anthony Burns, start Rory Burke, start Oisin Lohan, start Michael Garvey, start Shane Morgan. Do you know what I mean? Put them in, and if we get 12 points, the results going to be the same anyway. Do you know what I mean? But at least ask for effort and fight. Do you know what I mean? And I just didn't see it. And, you know, I'm ranting now at the moment, but it's a worrisome pattern whereby when we get bit, the tools are dropped. And when Doughty came in, Doughty tried to pick it up again. In fairness to the kid, like, he tried to pick it up again, but just the supporting cast was around him. And I don't think we got a defender booklets.
No.
Yeah. When we look at the attention Cork and Clare, both sets of backs put on their opposite numbers. Like, Jesus, like, I don't think we got any, you know, issue with we didn't. How to put this? I'm not trying to promote Dr. Hurland. That's not what I'm trying to do. But you know what I'm trying to say? Give the Kilkenny forwards a bit of attention. Do you know what I mean? And if a lad's going for a goal, make sure it hurts him, right? He doesn't want to come back in again. Do you know what I mean? But make sure they feel it, like, you know what I mean? Be like, you should have six Adam Hogans, like that type of way. And that's what I don't see. And it's a repetitive theme. The Limerick game, the Cork game, Tip game, there was no attention placed. No lad is booked. It's like, and we spoke about Cork a couple of years ago when they played the Kilkenny Murphy in the league game, remember? Down in Parkie Weave, there's no Cork back booked. And you know what I mean? There was no, I don't even know if they were free given away.
Yeah.
But now go, we're in that situation. And it must be so disappointing for the management team to train hard. And as I said before, as there's no correlation between training well and playing well. None. Absolutely none. So, Murph, over to you.
I was just to kind of guide that slightly, Murph. I actually wrote down just in my notes when I was watching the game on Saturday, was that there was a point where Owen Cody took over 2 points in a row. It felt like Galway had come out the second half with a bit of fight about them. And then the minute they went over, Kilkenny had got 9 points up. And I just wrote cakewalk after that. Because that's what it was, really.
The last
25, 30 minutes, Galway barely fired a shot.
Yeah, my last note, I'm just looking at my notebook here, is just says sloppy. I was making a note that there was obviously sloppy play. But after that, there wasn't anything. Like, it's actually very hard to even drill into this game at all. Like, it's all very broad strokes. Galway just didn't muster anything. Like, and I looked at Cathal Mannion, and even Pádraic Mannion there towards the end was trying to go out and hit lads and stuff, try and get something going. But you just felt that he didn't know in terms of where to start with the rest of the supporting cast, trying to get something going. Like, Cathal Mannion tipped away and he got, I don't know how many points he got, but Jesus, I didn't even bother writing it down, but I think he must have got 8 or 10 points. Like, he was tipping away. Even from play, he got one or two really nice scores. I can think of one in the first half, one in the second half that he got were really good. But
he finished up with 10, by the way, 6 frees.
Yeah. But he, but in general for Kilkenny, then, like, after the few of the balls that were going in, in fairness to Kilkenny full back line, they came out really well with them. And Kilkenny were a little bit wasteful then up front. They took a few shots from different angles, but they were allowed to be wasteful by Galway because Galway just didn't punish them in any way or whatsoever. And then I think once the full back line kind of strangled out the Galway full forward line, you just never felt that there was a threat coming through on the goal there at any stage.
Realistically, didn't Hugh Lawler and Mikey Butler just keep wheeling the McLaughlin absolutely out of the game?
Oh, they did, yeah, they did.
Did you watch the way they defended? So first and foremost, they didn't defend. They weren't reactive. This is the thing I was admiring about Lawler and Butler, really admiring them, in that sense they were reading the play actively. They weren't looking at their man going, right, wherever you go, I'm going to go like a truck and trailer. So Hugh Lawler, three occasions in the first half, he was first out of the ball, reading the play.
Yeah.
Whereas our lads, were second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like we were reacting to whatever Kilkenny did, whereas there was no, let's say, you know, proaction was always proaction. So like Lawler and Butler, like I think Butler got fouled twice by Whelan.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. There was one in the second half in particular that was just summed it up for the day, that he came out with the ball, got a push in the back, which is like if the full forward is pushing the full back in the back, there's something wrong.
This is the thing, Murph. Like, this is why I'm physically pulling my hair out. Right, I'm watching Cordy and I'm watching fucking Keown, and they're going hard back and forth. Right,
so yeah.
The defender has to chase them.
Yeah.
Whereas when the goalie falls, they're actually watching the play, right? Like they're like a spectator, and the Kilkenny man is allowed to read the play. Mm. Whereas if they're moving back and forth laterally, right, you've engaged your opposition. You know yourself, Murph. If you've got a player, right, and he's going back and forth and back and forth, you can't actually actively watch the play.
As much
as you want, right? You have to watch him the whole time. Whereas if you're static, you just get to watch it, no problem, and read it.
Like, it's ideal.
It's so simple. It's so simple. Yeah. Like, at least take them out of their comfort zone. So if you're number two, right, bring you for a spin.
Yeah.
Just go off out the pitch. You know, go left, go right, bring you for a spin. Do not let you in around the goal nice and tight.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
Jeez. And this is we're talking about experienced players here. Mm. Not talking about young kids now. Experienced players.
Just on that scale, is Whelan's form now becoming a big concern? Because he's meant to be your talismanic forward. Yeah. He's meant to be your leader.
Yeah, we're waiting for it to happen. With like, and it's like he not last season, the season prior, he was an all-star, I believe. I think he was an all-star, and he was awesome. He was awesome because he was a primary ball winner, and we often commented on his ability to retain the ball in there under heavy duress. You know what I mean? Like heavy duress. And in this situation now, like last year, I think the form across the board was poor from everyone. Let's be frank about it. Okay, that was a poor season, a write-off. And this year, you're kind of waiting for it to happen. You know what I mean? And even the shot selection, like where he's had the point he got in the second half, you might remember under the stand, like that's on the 21, extremely high level of difficulty. Like you wouldn't call that a high percentage chance of scoring. But like the space and the movement, again, I keep referring to two boys, right? That Mossy and Cordy keep getting into. Like, I just don't see that from Connor. You know, and he's an honest kid, right? If you ask him himself, is your form good? He'll say no, right? But if your form is bad, I'll always tell players, just get active. Be active, right? If the ball is not sticking for you, that's okay. It'll come, right? But get active. Get your legs moving. Get into tackles. You know, get into space, etc. Something will click for you. Do you know what I mean? But if you stay static, and then every ball is a contest, you know what I mean? That's a problem. You know what I mean? You can't get yourself in the game going in. Like, you'd love to have him right beside you, Murph. You can feel him. You can touch him. If you can feel him, you have him. If you can't feel him or touch him, you don't have him. Do you know what I mean? So, like, if he just starts moving and offering, he'll get himself into it. Now, I'm wondering now, do you take him out of there? Straight up, do you take him out of the four line? Do you put him at 11? You know, that's kind of where I'm leaning towards. Do you put just sheer pace inside? Because what we're doing is, if you were to tell me or ask me, what's Galway's pattern of play, I would struggle to tell you. I honestly don't know. I don't know, is it work the ball to a zone, deliver to a forward line? I don't know, is it runners? It doesn't seem like Anthony is developing. You know what I mean? Like, it's very clear. It was very clear for me watching Kilkenny. Very, very clear. Two deep wing forwards, come into the contest zone, work with an overlap in the likes of Malloy and Kinney, deliver into two lads. Very clear. You know what I mean? And even though you know what's happening, you just can't stop it. You know what I mean? So for Galway, I'm not sure
I was wondering, was there a part of it though? I can't remember. I don't think I said it last week, but there was something rumbling in my head thinking that, you know, Micheál Donoghue's version of Galway will probably be, we'll have a greater understanding of it next year when the round robin comes around. It's not the right off a year, but like he's taken over from Henry now. He's a few players have left. He's bringing in a few players and he's trying to put his own spin on the team. Okay. During all that, there should be, hard work. There should be grit. There should be determination. But we've seen it in other teams where that didn't necessarily happen straight away. Like Pat Ryan's Cork, when he took over, it didn't click straight away. And there was, again, we've said it previously, there was call of his head for a while. We've seen it with plenty of teams. Like, okay, now people in Tipperary are starting to say that Liam Cahill's getting a bit of traction here now, and God, something could be happening here. You know, go back a year and people are saying, where are we going? What are we doing? Yeah. Like, I was thinking of it last week, and it's a point we won't be able to answer over the next few weeks, and it's a point that won't be of any consolation to Galway people. But I was there thinking to myself, like, you know, will we see a huge man from Galway this year? I'm not sure. But will we start to see the green shoots of what Micheál Donoghue wants to do? That probably won't be till next year. Because, like, one of the points I made about Tipperary at the start of the show was that their passing game, they've been trying to do it for about 2 years now, and it's only starting to click now, because it does take a while for that understanding to happen. At the moment, Galway seem a million miles from where they should be, but will it take a kind of a bit of, call it doldrums, call it whatever you want, before we actually start to see them clicking? Yeah. Maybe so. Like, it mightn't be pretty for a while now with Galway, and judging by the weekend, it's hard to see where they're going to go. Yeah.
Fundamentally, right, rule number one for me is you have to be hard to beat.
Yeah.
You've got to be hard to beat, right? Survival and hard. If you're hard to beat, right, then you can work something in the future, right? And that's the ethos of every team that's successful, I think. You know, yeah. So if you take the Canadian team, yes, he had fantastic players. Of course he did. Generational players. But jeez, you were hard to beat. He defended like fucking dogs. You know what I mean? And that it was so hard to get through. That's just reality, okay? So if you're very, very tough defensively and hard to beat, every score is earned, like really earned. Whereas yeah. I just thought Kilkenny didn't have to earn anything. Let's be honest about it. They didn't have to earn scores at all, I said. They were hitting an awful lot of scores in space, easy runners. Like, it's like, geez, there's no contest here. We're not hard to beat. And again, go back to the pattern that's developed. You know, it's nearly forecast at this stage. When we get bet, we become easy to beat. So if you're easy to beat, geez, that's ingrained in a team. If that gets ingrained in a team, and say, whereby you just down tools because you're kind of accepting the result. You know, if Galway played Cork, right, yesterday, okay, this current team, unfortunately, and they were 12 points down, that 12 would turn to 20. Do you know what I mean? Whereas with Clare, it turned to zero. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, fair point. Yeah.
Like, is that great in Galway at the moment? No, it's not. But it has to be developed. And like, again, I'm not sure who I was talking to, but he mentioned about Owen Kelly, who spoke about the 2006 and 2007 minor teams that joined their senior team. And he goes, again, youthful exuberance, they came in and they worked so hard. And it pushed them on. It's nearly that they found a new level through recruitment, through young players. So, like, I'm saying at this stage, I don't think anybody in Galway would disagree that throwing the lads and just see what happens. Do you know what I mean? Because it couldn't be any worse than Saturday, lads.
Yeah. Just as we round off in this game, because I think we'll have to wait to get an update on where Adrian Mullen is going to be at, where TJ, I think, is looking at probably 6 to 8 weeks, I think, is the talk about this calf injury. And it looked like a rough enough knee injury as well when Shea Murphy was coming off. So hopefully he's going to be okay. So they were kind of three blows to pick up during the game.
Mullen looked in agony, that.
He did. Like, he gave the thumbs up in agony.
But
his ankle looked a lot of pain, yeah.
You just knew this guy is in big trouble. And he tried to get mobile, couldn't get mobile, which signifies not something you can run off. It looks like a bit of time there, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks like
we'll wait and see. I'm sure we'll get an update on their fitness as we get closer to this weekend. So Kilkenny go up to Antrim, and Galway have to go to Tullamore to take on Offaly. Just a final word on Galway, Skill. Are you worried about getting into the top three now at this stage?
We use this phrase every week, well, evidence-based approach, right? And like, if we put up a big fight, right, and we got beaten technically and beaten soundly by a superior team, I've no issue, no problem whatsoever. Yeah. I think we'll move on, and I think our general quality of hurler, you know, would honestly speaking, would outclass Offaly Antrim, okay? Where we had no fight. So it's like, if we go play a team now that are perceived we're better than them, okay, in terms of quality, then our lads might feel, you know, this is going to happen. It's a result. You know, it's a foregone conclusion. I'm not in that boat. I'm not worried. I'm forewarned. That's what I am. If I'm a player there, or a member of the management, I'm forewarned that our performance last Saturday was not good enough. If we bring that again this Saturday, we're going to be toast. That's reality. And you notice they've Offaly, they'll come with a good crowd. You know, there's hype in Offaly hurling. There is, we can't deny that, right? So the crowd come heavy and it's going to be energetic and they're going to come with huge energy to the players. So you have to be able to meet that, match it, and then exceed it. So again, there was no evidence of that on Saturday last. So I hate to use the word in this fucking word in sport. I'm hopeful. I'm not expectant. I hate hopeful because hope means, oh, geez, I've no idea how this is going to go, right?
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we just put up a better fight, you know, and the result will take care of itself.
Yeah. We've Wexford Dublin, which is on the TV this coming Saturday. Wexford have done their part. Antrim again, away from home, another defeat. Wexford won by 224 to 19 points at Wexford Park on Saturday. This was the non-televised game of the afternoon. Goals in the second half from Kevin Foley and Keane Byrne. I will never understand the space that Antrim left for the Keane Byrne goal particularly. It was run right through the middle of the field. And then it's almost like the characteristic Keane Byrne finish, which is the one where he gets in his hand and he shoots across goal. But just the space that was afforded was absolutely crazy. Antrim had started that game reasonably well as well, and they were 6 points to two up early on in the game. But after that, it was like Lee Chin, again, a masterclass both in leadership and also hitting the frees quite well, which has not always been the story for Wexford. But 12 frees he sent over, 16 points in all. Rory O'Connor converting 3 points from play. Conor Hearn also giving 3 points from further back up the field. Wexford just took complete control. And even though they lost Jack O'Connor to a red card, they still had the stronger fight in them in the second half as well. So they came through in the end reasonably comfortably. 2 goals and 24 points to 19 points. So I think at this stage, Murph, I know you didn't get to see this, so we're all judging this off the highlights we would have seen on the Sunday game as opposed to seeing it live. Wexford finished out the league strongly. This is exactly what they would have wanted to do to start the Leinster Championship. And if they get a result against Dublin, then Wexford have put themselves into right contention to qualify.
Yeah, and it's a far cry from where we saw. I'm kind of thinking in particular the Kilkenny match. Like, it was one of the interviews where I saw Keith Roster being fairly down in the dumps, I suppose, as to where they were at. And since then, you know, obviously we talk about the win against Clare, the win against Limerick, great stuff. But then also he described this one, I think, as a bit of a, not to say a banana skin, but potential banana skin, whereby Wexford were favourites to win this game. But, you know, when you go out and you're expected to win this game, and also it's the one where you're looking to certainly get 2 points off of and move on. If you don't take 2 points there, or you get dragged into a match where you draw or lose, which we've seen Wexford do in round robin over the last few years, not get a result in a game they're expected to get a result of, you suddenly now make life quite hard on yourself. But exactly as you said, now they're looking at it going, well, lads, game on here now. We can actually go and get out of Leinster. And regardless of how they do it or what the result is at the end, Wexford getting out of Leinster, considering maybe the negative talk that was around Wexford over the last few weeks, is great. You know, in terms of they're kind of going through a rebuilding phase. They've lost really influential players that have been there over the last few years, Dio Keefe, Liam McGovern, etc. So to maybe steady the ship now after, you know, a bit of a bad period, absolutely going and putting in a performance against Dublin and getting a result would be huge. But just maybe just taking that step towards getting out of Leinster and ensuring that as a minimum, I think is a good place for Wexford. But look, they look at, again, maybe to touch on what Skell was saying as well, they'll be looking to see, well, look, by the time we meet Galway, if Galway are in that position, let's go and take a scalp off them, you know. So
if Wexford take over Dublin, Murph, right, they go into the Galway game in round three with 4 points.
Yeah.
You know, and if let's say Galway beat Offaly, right? Galway come into two, obviously.
Yeah.
If they overturn Galway, that's Leinster final. Job done.
Yeah.
You're in. So that game becomes, in my view, let's say, a Leinster semi final for Wexford.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So, and it's very clear for Wexford as well, then, isn't it? Like, you know, they can look at the Dublin game and go, right, lads, big bullseye on this. Like, this decides quite a bit for us if we go and get a result here, which they're well capable of doing as a standalone match. Like, I've often seen Wexford come to Kilkenny, or we play Wexford down in Wexford Park, and they put in that big performance and the crowd gets behind them. I think they'll be looking at this going, lads, get a result here now. And, you know, the knock-on effect for getting to a Leinster final is you've at least guaranteed yourself a quarter final. Like, you know, again, walking away from 2025 for Wexford, they'll be looking going, at least quarter final now would be mighty stuff, you know. So yeah, they're in a good position, and it's good for them.
Yeah, Dublin play Wexford Parnell Park 4:30 on Saturday. That is the GA Plus game. It's 6:30 for Offaly against Galway. I was at Offaly in Dublin. It wasn't the standard of hurling that we saw in Munster the next day, but it was equally thrilling with the way the game finished in the end. So Dublin were 3 points down with a few minutes to go, about 5 minutes of normal time left. They got a kick from their bench, and particularly Ronan Hayes. He scored 1-1 of their 1-4 to a point in the closing stages. Dublin ran out 3-point winners in the end. Offaly were game throughout the game. First time since 2018 they've played in the Leinster Championship. They got, again, Oisin Kelly, who's been a goal machine, scored the first goal. And when Killian Sampson banged in the second one, and Offaly got a couple of points either side of it, they'd gone 4 points up, I think, at that stage in the game. And you were starting to think, despite the fact that Dublin had hit a host of wides throughout the game that Offaly might actually hold on. But Dublin were able to just go a little bit more direct towards the end. We talk about that being kind of a theme of the weekend. And Dublin got changed when they just kind of sent the ball in the closing stages. Again, you talk about the players that came off the bench. John Heatherton scored a point, which was at a crucial stage. But also, he nearly forced another goal, which was a good save from Mark Troy. When Heatherton got up ahead of, I think it was Jason Sampson, to flick the ball down. Ronan Hayes with his 1-1 off the bench as well. Fergal Whiteley, I thought, did quite well after he came on. Donald Burke picked up a hand injury and had to come off at half-time. He didn't re-emerge back out. But Dublin had a bit about them. I kind of like this Dublin team, and I know I've said it a few times during the year. They run the ball incredibly well. They make space for each other. They pass the ball off. They've got two scoring midfielders. Brian Hayes got 3 points in play during the game. Sean Curry hit the frees perfectly well, especially even when his clubmate Donald Burke went off. He still hit over five of them. They'll be definitely, Niall O'Callaghan will say during the week, they need to tighten up the shooting a little bit for the game against Wexford this week. But I don't see any reason, Skell, why this Dublin team can't be targeting another Leinster final again.
Like, it's funny, we just spoke about Wexford there and what they, as Murph said, the road is clear for them. It's nearly equally as clear for Dublin. Yeah. I mean, it's. I suppose in years previous, Dublin would always look at the Wexford. This is me just imagining, assuming this, right? But they look at the Wexford game going, that'll decide who finishes third. You know, that was my perception of Galway anyway. Whereas this year they're saying, right, the Wexford game could decide who's in Leinster final. Straight up, you know.
Yeah.
Like, that's where the championship is trying. It's amazing. My tone 6 days ago was, I was strongly assuming it'll be Galway Kinney Leinster final. Because I was assuming there'd be a big performance between by Galway. Whereas now it's open country, lads. And like, you're right about Dublin, okay? They don't have, you know, these, so like, I don't mean this disrespectfully, they don't have an out and out superstar forward or superstar back that you can say, right, a lot of their game depends on. They are, let's say, a hard working, hard running, fit team that are effective. Do you know what I mean? They're hard to beat. They're energetic, they're athletic. You know what I mean? And in Parnell Park, they just, for me, they're just a different animal. You know what I mean? They're very hard to beat. You know, we talked about Antrim going away, but still, you know, when they travel away, let's say that they're not as effective. I wouldn't say Dublin isn't that, but no way. But at home in Parnell Park, they're extremely hard to defeat. So, like, Galway has to go there. You know, Wexford has to go there. So it's not going to be all plain sailing. So it's if you're okay, like, and you're saying, right, let's target Leinster final. Let's go for it. And let's have a crack at Kinney twice.
Yeah. I think, while, as you say, they might have a superstar player.
You're just making really good points. I just really like listening to you.
No, don't you? You're just enjoying the poor guy, man, suffering here. You're enjoying it.
I never enjoy you suffering.
I tell you, I was suffering when Offaly had been 4 points up and it looked like they were going to get over the line, and it really felt at that point. Especially when there was just a couple of moments, I think Keelan Kiley snatched at one, which would have put them back 3 points in front again. And then it always felt like Dublin had a kick in them. And then, again, you talk about the Clare crowd getting behind them. There wasn't a big crowd at Parnell Park on Saturday, but it was a boisterous crowd when Dublin started to come back into it. And then as they were launching that ball in and getting a bit of change in the last 5 or 6 minutes, it was like the crowd kind of carried them home a little bit in those closing stages as well. I think they still have some very good hurlers. Like, Chris Crummy is excellent. The two midfielders are really, really good. I think Donald Burke is that bit of X factor for them. I hope his hand injury isn't too serious for the coming weeks. And then they've got good functional hurlers outside of that. So yeah, that should be a really good game. We'll talk about Wexford and Dublin on the members pod, and we'll also talk about Offaly against Galway as well. I just want to mention the other games that took place in the weekend just gone by in the Joe McDonagh Cup, where we had the first round of fixtures there. Carlow, I think, are the team to beat in this championship, coming out of Leinster last year and the form we saw for them in Division 1B of the league this year. Chris Nolan got a hat-trick of goals. They beat down by 6-23 to 20 points down, coming off the back of winning Division 2A of the league, but that's a huge start for Carlow. Leash at Mossy Keys score 1-8 for them. Again, they had no recognised free taker, so Mossy Keys was taking the freeze on Saturday afternoon against Westmeath. David Glennon, who Skell was at an engagement party with, was forced off with a head injury early in the game. Killian Doyle scored 1-11 for Westmeath. A real struggle for Saoirse Bulfin's team there. Leash won by 3-25 to 1-22. So last year's beaten finalists off to a big start there. And Kildare will be kicking themselves that they lost against Kerry. Kerry snatched it in injury time against them, but a big win on the road for Kerry in Newbridge, 117 to 19 points in the end against Kildare. It already sets up Kildare against Westmeath this coming weekend in the McDonagh as a must win for both teams. And if you lose, you're probably looking over your shoulder. Leash have to make the trip to Ballycran to take on Down. And then the game on Sunday will be Carlow making the trip to Kerry, and that game is at 2 o'clock. The two live games in the telly this weekend, which we'll be talking about this coming Sunday, Cork and Tip is at 4 o'clock, and the 2 o'clock game is Waterford against Clare. You've Antrim against Kilkenny and Corrigan Park on Sunday as well at 2, and the game's on Saturday, Offaly Galway 6:30, and the GA Plus game is Dublin against Wexford, Parnell Park 4:30. So all that to look forward to. I think we'll go a bit earlier on Sunday this week. I don't think any of us are gallivanting on Sunday, are we, lads?
I don't think so.
No.
I think we're well placed. I'll try and get out of work on time, and we'll do an early enough pod. We might even countenance the idea of maybe a live pod this weekend, depending on what happens.
Yeah.
Well, why not? James Skell for now, thanking you.
Thanks, lads.
Paul Murphy, we'll see you on Sunday.
Thanks very much, lads.
Saving money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Easily transport mulch, stone, and other materials with the Masterforce heavy-duty steel wheelbarrow. Maneuver over any terrain with a 16-inch tire that never goes flat. Saving money on this and all other Masterforce tools exclusively at Menards. Visit us in-store and at Menards.com and see all the great deals going on now in our weekly flyer. Save big.